going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets, powered by FCN, presented by Game Plus Network. Chris Meany here with you. Happy Tuesday. Welcome in. Some technical difficulties on my end, so if you're watching, hanging out live on our FTN YouTube page, our apologies. If you're watching on Game Plus, well, good for you. Always a great lineup on Game Plus Network. Pat Mayo Experience, All in Football with Jake Seeley. You can also catch that show on Game Plus Network. Mean Streets here 5 days a week, and soon to be Dangle Bet Selly as well. That show is officially in the books. We did it this morning, Eric Young and myself, 10 games on the ice in the NHL, also sponsored by PointsBet Canada. So super thrilled to have PointsBet with us for the rest of the way. As you see there, Johnny Hockey, George put him on the board, and he chipped in with a couple goals last night, a big Flames win against the Kings. So you can catch that show over to FTN YouTube page. Like I said, soon to be on Game Plus Network. It is free to check out, available on iTunes and Spotify, wherever it is that you listen to your favorite podcasts. Eric Young and I broke down all the games, gave our favorite picks, some props, some shot props, some goal scorers, as well as like sprinkled in a little DFS advice as well. It's a busy night on the ice, 10 games. I'm going to give a few of my favorite shot props as well as some picks. I think we got to do a little bit better. Yesterday, I believe, was brutal on this show. Willing to take some losses, but over at FTN Bets, we did have a positive night overall in the bet tracker. We did hit on a couple things. Jake DeBrusque, I think, like plus 140 for three shots. I believe he had six last night. He found the back of the net again. His Bruins are also in action as they play the Detroit Red Wings today. So a little hockey talk towards the end of the show. Also going to bring in producer Tino. The NBA returns to action tonight. I believe there are 12 games in the association. So a lot of action on the hard court as well. We're going to talk some picks and props in both of those sports. I do want to give a little bit of love here off the top to the Kansas Jayhawks, right? Who got it done last night, 72-69. They get their fourth title, down 15 at half, down as many as 16. The largest comeback win in national championship history. I am rocking the old school Kansas Jayhawks. That's why you see like the neck is all frizzled. I mean, I was kind of embarrassed to even rock this. Blame producer Tino and graphics guy George. He's like, go ahead, rock it, right? You got to rock the Kansas. Honestly, this shirt is probably 40 years old. Like, Wilt Chamberlain's on the back of it. Like, it is extremely, extremely old. But a shout out to the Jayhawks. What an unbelievable turn of events. Honestly, watching that game last night, like, Carolina was just in complete control. I thought it was going to continue to be a blow for them, despite the Jayhawks having strong halves in this tournament. You know, the second half comes to mind, down by six against Miami, and they poured it on. But a 31-10 run in the first 10 minutes of the second half, 47-29. They outscored UNC in that second half. Bill Self, one of 16 head coaches now with multiple titles. Ochai Agbaji, you know, I think you could have picked a couple different players for most outstanding player of the Final Four, but he gets it. Conference tournament most outstanding player, he got it. Conference player of the year, he got that as well. The first player since Shane Battier in 2001 to win all three. I think the difference in the game was Bacot when he went down and he kind of re-suffered that injury on the ankle. He went down late in that game. And then they went to David McCormick, the Jayhawks, in the final minute. He had two big baskets for them. That was really the difference. But what an unbelievable performance from Bacot. Clearly, this guy was not 100%. The most double-doubles in a season of all time, actually tied David Robertson with 31. He was an absolute beast last night, a mismatch that the Jayhawks didn't have any answer for. I would imagine if he was 100%, we're looking at a bit of a different outcome. But congrats to the Jayhawks. Clearly, I am a little happy here as a slight homer, but you know, the number one seed in the tournament, they got it done. And, you know, I think we can all agree that UNC was much better than an 8 seed, and a phenomenal showing from them as well. I thought it was a pretty good game, but just a tale of two different halves. UNC all over them in the first half, and then Kansas came out and was really aggressive in the second half and just didn't settle. I thought they were settling for some mediocre shots in the first half, but madness is over. A shout out to DubDeuces85, Walter Riddell, who came on this show yesterday and gave the Kansas play on the money line, also the under on the total. Didn't get the Wilson prop, but 2 for 3, a profitable night as well, as now he's going to have some time to kind of regroup. And before we get into more college sports, because I know he covers both and he does a really good job at covering both as well. A couple more shout outs here before we bring in, we got Brian DeCorti of FTN Axis our guy. It is Masters week. We are going to talk about the Masters, a couple players that he's feeling. Of course, we're going to talk about Tiger Woods, and we will take a look at the overall leaderboard. He's got some outright stuff for us as well. Auston Matthews, I got to give this guy a little bit of love, right? A hat trick last night, tied Rick Vive for the most goals in Maple Leaf franchise history with 54 now. He's going to break that. He could potentially break that tonight. That record was held by Rick, I believe, in 81, 82. But 47 goals in Matthews' last 47 games. That is absolutely incredible. Remarkable stuff, what he is doing. Auston Meadows was traded yesterday to our Detroit Tigers. I think we are calling them our Detroit Tigers. They may be Tino's Tigers. We talked a little bit about them yesterday. The over on the win total, I think that's a great addition. Auston Meadows. Last year, 27 home runs, rather. He only hit 234. I believe he's probably a 240 hitter. He struggles against lefties. We'll get into that move with Tino in a little bit, but I think the landing spot is really good for him. I think it's a great addition to the Tigers lineup. 2019 was a really nice campaign for him. 33 home runs, hit 291, and had 12 stolen bases. He's a career 260 hitter. I believe that's where he kind of falls into... That's where I would project him this year, right around a 260 hitter. And don't want to dive into it too much, but, you know, there's a lot of left-handed pitchers inside the AL East. There's not a lot of left-handed pitchers inside the AL Central. So a bit of a pass there, right? I mean, he won't be an everyday. I think he'll be close to an everyday guy. He may get some days off against lefties, but I believe he'll find a nice home there hitting near the top of the lineup in Detroit. A Tigers lineup, they're on their way. All right. DeCourty is in here next. Do want to give a little bit of love to those north of the border, especially in Ontario. We talked about this yesterday, and we have a nice little graphic here with Tiger Woods. You scan, and it'll bring you right over to Caesars. And, you know, Tiger Woods is outright prop, I guess, to win the Masters. It's kind of all over the place. 70-1 at PointsBet. We got to give them some love, of course. Sponsoring Dangle Betselli. 35-1 DK. 50-1 BetMGM. 12-1 top 5. Plus 525 to come top 10. Plus 200 top 20. Plus 115 top 30. 11-1 to be top 5 after round 1. He's minus 115 to make the cut. He's minus 115 to miss the cut. So things have changed just a little bit, but those north of the border, especially in Ontario, scan that code, the QR code, and it'll bring you all kinds of greatness. Brian's in here next. We're going to talk about the Masters. Got to get his thoughts on Tiger Woods and a couple of other players that he is feeling as well. So lots to get to here on this show. Keeper Lock Mean Streets continues here on Game Plus Network. Welcome back into Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network. Chris Meany is bringing Axis_DFS. It is Brian DeCourty. It is Masters Week. Exciting time. Bogey free. Check it out tonight. You are going to be with Matt Jones. I don't know if Alex Blickle is going to join you, but it's going to be a kind of a new revamped show with the three of you guys every Tuesday evening talking some bets and some golf. Welcome in, dude. How are you?
Thanks. Glad to be here. And Alex will be joining us. He's down at the Masters, actually. So he will be calling in from the hallowed grounds. So,
oh man, how exciting is that? Super jealous, right?
Yeah. So he's out there right now. Hopefully, getting some. Probably watching. Hopefully, it's not raining. I saw the weather today, but
some showers. Were you at all any surprised to hear that Tiger Woods is gonna suit up and like always? I think maybe a little bit more intensified because it's at the Masters, but the gallery hanging out with Tiger Woods yesterday.
I saw that photo from a practice round. Like, it looked like a Sunday, minus no red shirt. I can't say I'm overly surprised once he decided to play the PNC with Charlie in December. That, you know, and he was out at his event, his little Tiger Hero World Challenge, and like he was out on the range every day. Like, it was just the content catnip all week. And it's like, I don't think he's doing this to come back and play the Valspar or what have you, right? So I've been pretty confident that he was going to, and then you get all the reports that he'd been on the grounds in recent weeks, you know, he'd been walking and everything just lined up. Like, I don't think at this point in his career, does he need to waste his time if he's just not going to play? It didn't feel like a tease. It felt like literally him having to do this to get ready to play the Masters. So I can't say I was that shocked. I am excited, obviously, growing up in that era, as many have. I mean, it's pretty much why I got into golf. So
Yeah, no kidding. Well, before we bring up the odds and some guys that you are feeling, I mean, I had to bring up Tiger with you, and I just want to get your thoughts overall, and if you think he is going to make the cut or miss it. I'm seeing minus 115 over at DK, both make the cut, miss the cut. I think he could have got in. The odds have changed just slightly. Of course, now it's official that he is going to be there. I mean, the guy knows the course so well, right? Yeah. Five majors here, one behind Jack, who's got six. I've seen points bet 70-1 to win, DK 35-1, BetMGM 50-1. You see Caesars there at 35. It's like kind of all over the place. You know, shop around. We got the free prop shop and parlay calculator. 12-1 top five, plus 525 top 10, plus 200 top 20, plus 115 top 30, and 11-1. To be top five after round one, and then where everybody will absolutely lose their mind if he is top five after round one or leading. What's your initial thought on Tiger? It's a hilly course, dude. Really, really hilly. I think he's going to struggle to kind of get through it. I'm not doubting what he can bring to the table, but for him to win, I think would be an unbelievable story, even crazier than when he won, what, in 2018? Kind of right. Out of nowhere. I believe he was 80-1 at one point on some books at that moment. What's your overall take and feel what you expect from Tiger here on these first 2 days?
I'll take my fan hat off. And like, so yes. Like you said, the experience that has to mean strokes for him. So like, even if he's an average PGA Tour player right now, let's just call him that. Cause I don't think he's going to come out here if he thinks he's going to shoot 85s, right? I don't think he's here just to get the parade. Like, I mean, you heard him in the press conference, or if you didn't this morning, like he said, I'm here. I feel like I could win. He's like, the golf is fine. It's the walking. He was very specific about, I can hit any golf shot I need. Having said that, then I assume he's been playing and practicing. So even if we just call him an average golfer, like to make the cut minus 110 seems fair to me. You could have got him earlier this week, anywhere from plus 200. I saw, you know, it's wow. Come all the way down, right, to what you're seeing. There was a bunch of bonuses out there that are now off the board. Probably because of everything he said at that press conference. So yeah. Like my expectations aren't, I don't know if I even have any. I expect him to compete. To me, it would be a great shock, honestly, if he came out and just fired a couple 80s and was like, well, that didn't go very well. And that's, I guess, in the realm of possibility, but I feel like that's on a tail. That's on the outlier. Just like I think a win would be an outlier. I honestly think a great Masters for him would be like make the cut, hang out, you know, be inside the top 20. I feel like your first competitive golf in over a year, calendar year, after what he went through with the rehab and everything, I don't see... You know, obviously as a fan, like I'd be amazing to see him in the top five. A little probably nuke my bets if that happens, kind of like when he won. You know, that part of me would enjoy it immensely. But realistically, I think to make the cut is very well within his means and capability based on what he's saying.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Yes or no? You think he wins the cut? You think he makes the cut?
Yes.
Yes. I think he makes it too. I think he makes it yep. too. And we got some people hanging out in the chat. You know, Gildan's in the house. You know, Tiger Woods is playing, so he's excited. There's a lot of people, right? They're just casual golf fans. The Masters yeah. is fantastic, always awesome. But to have Tiger back is certainly great for the sport. I would say that. George says, how could you at least not throw a few bucks on it? I know one guy he's going to throw a few bucks on, and that's Rory McIlroy. Let's bring up the leaderboard here. Well, I guess we'll call it the leaderboard, but, you know, for the odds. This is from DraftKings. Again, shop around. We got the free prop shop parlay calculator. Make sure you're following Brian on Twitter. You get notified right away when he makes the bets in the bet tracker. You got a few in there, some top 10s, some top 20s, which you've been absolutely crushing. Follow FTN Alerts on the Twitter machine to get notified right away when those bets come in. And like I always say, you got the betting package, you got all the picks and all the bets, and Brian is sharp here with golf. So Rahm's up at the top, no surprise, 9-1. You got Scottie Scheffler in there at 12-1. I mean, I think maybe a little bit of a surprise. We talked to, you know, before the season started. I don't know if I would have guessed that he would be 12-1, number two there. JT is also at 12-1. Cameron Smith, 14. DJ at 16. You got Xander in there. Rory, a bunch of guys here in the 20-1 range. Brooks, Morikawa, Rory, Spieth is 22-1. Man, Spieth, I don't know what's going on with the swing, but I'm not feeling too confident about him heading in here this weekend. Cantley at 25-1 as well. Who do you like on this board? I know we'll dig a little bit deeper later, but who do you like on this board?
Yeah, to start, I'm just going to give myself a little pat on the back because I did write an article in December from saying maybe you should go bet Scheffler now at 40-1.
Oh, wow, you're all over it.
because in case he wins, and he's just managed to win three times instead of just the once. So I also wrote a Berger who at 40-1, who's around 48. So we hit the big one, though. If you got a lot of value on that Scheffler bet, if you were able to make that back in December. But as far as that board goes, yeah. You know, I bet Rory at 20-1, and I didn't think I'd get there. I actually made him more 26 or 27, so I bet a little under my own number. But I'm not sure sometimes when it comes to how much experience at Augusta truly matters. So I'm aware of that, especially when it comes to outrights. I've been on here, talked a lot about the variance and the luck needed. You know, and with Rory, he's been playing very well coming into this. Last week, if you saw that, you might disagree with me. Yeah, the irons were a little all over the place. I don't think he suddenly forgot how to golf or hit irons. Leading into that, it was very good. I don't think it just stopped. Who knows what's on his mind? Who knows if he was trying to hit shots for the Masters? I don't know. I try not to guess that. So at 20-1, he's been hitting the ball great off the tee, continues to do so. We know his history here. We know the career Grand Slam. Is it the best number ever? No. But I feel like, you know, maybe, you know, Tiger coming back, that's a lot of the attention. Like normally the story is Rory, the career Grand Slam. He's one of them. I really haven't seen it talked about a ton. Maybe I've been insulating myself the last few days, trying to get all my bets in and content and what have you. Maybe it is out there. I don't know. It all just felt right, which isn't always something I incorporate, but with the outrights, I get a little more subjective. Just because there's just a lot more nuance into picking a guy to win rather than place top 10, top 20. Like, I'm not actually betting Rory for any of those. You know, I'm going with the full win at 20-1.
Yeah, I mean, I like the number. And like you said, I mean, it's not fantastic, but even at 20-1, I think it's okay, right? I think it's fine to still jump on board with that. And dude, I'm super impressed with the Scotty analysis. Like, I guess I must have missed that from December. I must feel pretty good because, like you said, I mean, he's balling out and you got a much better number if you were in on that. TJ checks in and says Cantlay at 22-1 feels good. You want to touch on Cantlay?
Tempting. I think I made him about 22. My issue with Cantlay is, now this could flip, right? But the irons have like disappeared this year, which is a problem. And it hasn't been just like one round like with Rory. He's just struggled in general with the iron play. Now he's stepped it up with his short game and that's been consistent. But it does worry me coming to Augusta if your iron play continues to hover around zero strokes gain. Like that to me could be an issue here. If you're not hitting it where you want to be hitting it, or at least somewhat close, you're going to leave yourself with a lot of difficult up and downs. It wouldn't shock me if Cantlay won. I think he has the pedigree. Like I said, it was honestly between him and Rory, I think, for me at the top of the board. So I don't hate it. I just have that small concern.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, Brian, hang on. One more segment, dude. We're going to dig a little bit deeper. You gave Rory, talked a little bit about Cantlay. I know you got some longer outrights here as well. So Mean Streets will continue on Game Plus Network. Don't go anywhere. You're watching Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network or FTN YouTube page as well. I see some more people hanging out here. Brian, because of you, and we appreciate that. Axis_DFS. We got some casual golf fans in here. You're answering questions, which I love. I mean, you're getting in there and you're giving some long shots.
Doing my best.
For those who are watching Game Plus Network, DJ Betts did bring up a question: which long shot golfer would you bet on? We're gonna get into a couple that you like, but let's just answer this from DJ here now. Which long shot is on your radar?
Yeah, without deep analysis, early in the week, I do believe, despite his history here, Max Homa sets up pretty well as how he's been playing. So I would shop around to see what you can get Max Homa at. And another guy would be Harold Varner III. I know last I looked, he was like 200-ish on DraftKings, 160 FanDuel. I don't have points bet up in front of me. 150, I believe, on points bet. So if you want to shop around for Harold Varner III as well.
Nice. Like those are certainly long shots, but what about Tyrrell Hatton? Yeah. I mean, at 90-1, that's a pretty solid one as well, right? Talk to me about Hatton.
So Hatton's been all over the place. So he opened at 75 where I grabbed him. And then for a couple short hours, he moved to 95. And then this morning he's down to 55. So Tyrrell Hatton has been playing some outstanding golf this year. And it's really carried over from last year as well. Continues to hit his irons well. He's been solid off the tee. Around the green is average enough to bet, like, he has it in him. It's not a consistent necessarily like game, but it's not a bleed either. And we know he's a pretty solid putter as well. His Masters history is so-so, but his last time out here, he did finish T8, and he gained strokes across all four categories. So really, that's a play on a number where I made Hatton. Now, the market consensus is about 50, but he opened up 75 to 90 somewhere. I made him about 39 to 1, so that was pretty much an auto fire on Tyrrell Hatton.
Yeah, I think that's a really good long shot bet. Like, I would consider that a long shot bet. I mean, you know you went a little bit deeper there, but 90 to 1. TJ checking in saying he had Hatton at 95 yesterday as well. So pretty interesting. I'll throw two names at you that are on my card that I just think are trendy players, and I just have a soft spot for them. One's Sam Burns and one's Willie Z. There you go. Burns, 50 to 1. So you're feeling Sam?
Yeah, so Sam Burns, and he's interesting, right? So a little tidbit. Obviously, we hear a lot about debuts at the Masters and how they don't often end in wins. I believe 1979 was the last time someone came to Augusta their first time and won. I think that normally makes sense, right? Because you have to be in the top 50 in the world to qualify. You have to, or you've had to have won an event. Well, golfers they're not always at their best when they win their first event, or they get into the top 50. But like Sam Burns is ranked number 11 in the world in the official World Golf rankings, and he has 3 PGA Tour victories coming into his first Masters. So I didn't go back and study. That's a lot to pull, but I imagine that's one of the better resumes to ever be making your Masters debut. And yeah, he's another guy I made closer to like 36 to 1. So we took the 50 to 1 that was out there. I honestly don't know exactly where he's sitting now, but the driving is a little erratic. That shouldn't be as much of a problem here. Just stay out of those pine straw forests, please. The iron game's fine. The short game's fine. Like, just don't find the forest here. There's wide fairways. There's very limited rough. You know, at Valspar, he was better. The driving accuracy, you know, and that's a tighter course. So, yeah, Sam Burns, I think, lines up pretty well here, despite it being his first official trip to the Masters.
Yeah, 50 to 1 in
maybe
most.
He's played practice rounds. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. 50 to 1 in most spots. Like, DK still has a points bet. FanDuel's at 41. It's like a weird number, 41. 40 at BetMGM, 35 at Caesars. So he's still like some value there. What's Willie Z just a little bit too raw? Is that your feeling?
Honestly, yeah. The number was, I made him a little
35,
shorter.
I think he's at.
And he deserves respect. He's one of the best ball strikers on the planet. The short game does worry me. Now, the putting itself, you know, at Augusta, if you can lag putt, which he seems to be able to do pretty well, I think he'll be okay. I don't hate it. I just wish it was like 45-ish, like Burns area. But I think him finishing second at his only Masters ever might have played into the market number a little bit. And he was extraordinary there. He gained strokes putting at the Masters. I don't fully buy into the yips of his short putting being a major downfall. You know, how many 5-footers is he looking at around? Hopefully he's just lagging them closer. Now, maybe he isn't here. I don't know. I understand the concern. I think I'd rather maybe go to him in a DFS area where, you know, I'd feel I feel very comfortable with him being able to play well here, make the cut. He could win, I guess. It wouldn't shock me, but yeah, it was more of a number issue with Will than it was the actual game itself.
Yeah, it's not fantastic. Some spots really like 28 to 1 is not a great number at all. He's a trendy player, I think, too, right? People are well aware and they like to bet him, but 35 to 1 is the best I'm seeing. All right, we'll get you out of here on this. You got one more guy that you are liking that you're feeling? Share a little nugget.
Let's see here. Sorry, my note page just dropped out on me. But I mean, I guess you could look at like a Shane Lowry is intriguing to me.
What about a Neiman?
Ooh, Joaquin Neiman. Yeah, so 65 to 1. Thank you. Sorry. and Neiman's playing with Tiger. I just saw the pairings get released. I know that always likes to ruffle
people's
feathers.
Oh, no, it's intimidation factor. Yeah, oh, he's going to be nervous. Or is he going to break it?
I'm trying to remember his exact quote when he won the Genesis and Tiger gave him the trophy. But like, I don't know, like maybe it's inspiring, right? Like I don't have the stats on who's played with Tiger, but he I know Justin Thomas seems to play well when he plays with Tiger. Like it does happen. I don't think this is you know, 2000s Tiger in red, like maybe he's not as intimidating because these kids grew up watching him, but they didn't actually deal with it. They didn't play with that Tiger. Again, this is me speculating, but in general, I like Neiman a lot here at that number. That I think that was like the best number we could have found at the time. He's played well at the comp courses, Genesis being one. We hear Riviera quite a bit. You know, missing fairways there isn't as big of a deal. Distance is important. Iron play, we see around the green matter there. He seems to have improved his around the green game quite a bit this particular season, and it's been holding. It was a concern of his a skill, but it's been holding. That's good to see, right? And we know the irons and off the tee is fine. So, yeah, at 65 to 1, again, a guy who probably should have been around 45 to 50 per my numbers. So we're getting a little value. He's seen Augusta, been here twice. Nothing wild with a 40th and a missed cut. But again, the more experience, the more you gain, the more knowledge you have of where to miss, where not, chips, all that fun stuff. So yeah, 65 to 1, Joaquin Neiman. If you can find something around that, maybe even a 55, I think it'd be okay.
65 is live, dude, over at DraftKings. Right. Like your number, like you said, that's, I mean, FanDuel is 44, so. Pet points bet is 50, bet MGM is 50, but 65 to 1, I think, is a pretty good number. I think on Sunday, the intimidation factor being paired up with Tiger is absolutely real, but I think on the opening day, like you're right, maybe I'm a little bit
just
of...
get amped up.
Yeah, it's just amped up, excited to play with Tiger, and you know, try to go toe-to-toe with the GOAT. Dude, we appreciate it, man. I know you're super busy. This is an exciting week for you. All kinds of great content over at FTNDaily.com, FTNBets.com, FTNFantasy.com, Axis underscore DFS. DeCourty has a lot of great props, some top 10s, some top 20s as well, which you've absolutely been crushing. So thanks for taking the time. Bogey-free tonight. Are you guys locked in on a time this evening? What time are you guys going to go live?
Yep,
8:30 Eastern. So check it out live on our FTN YouTube page as well. We'll say goodbye to Brian. We will say hello to Tino. We will talk some Tigers baseball. We got some NHL picks and some NBA stuff as well. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to get to here on Mean Streets. Welcome back. Mean Streets here live on Game Plus Network. Producer Tino underscore Rodriguez on the Twitter machine, and you are rocking the Daily Tee, so you are in, you are in costume. You're making some Masters bets? You going to sprinkle Tiger, a little something on Tiger or what?
Yeah, Tiger's making the cut. Look, as a casual golf fan, there's no way you see a guy go through what he went through and want him to not make the cut. So I don't, love to take a minus odd bet. Maybe I'll sprinkle something top 20. I know George was pounding the table on that earlier this week. I probably can't get it as good as when he, spoke on it. But we'll get a little top 20 action, a little make the cut. Why not, right? Let's have some fun. I don't know if he'll win either, but, don't bet against Tiger. Definitely don't bet against Tiger.
Well, that's one thing that I've learned over my time of following golf, not to ever bet against Tiger. I think it would be a hell of a story if this guy found a way to win the Masters and we were coming in here on Monday. It would just be a full-on Tiger story. Well, we're going to talk some baseball. You got some NBA in the next segment as well. But before we bring up just the NFBC, I believe we're on round five. Austin Meadows, man. Austin Meadows. We talked up the Tigers yesterday. I think it was and usually when, Tampa calls you, you kind of hang up. They win a lot of trades, but I think it's a great get, man. I think he's going to do pretty well in that lineup too.
Yeah, I love the get for the Tigers. Obviously, we talked them up. Riley Green seems to be out for a little bit here, so that should help them in terms of bolstering the outfield. The Rays got some prospects, so I don't know what the prospects will turn out to be. I know one of them is a draft pick, but you're right. You typically hang up the phone, especially if you're the Pittsburgh Pirates. You never answer a phone call from the Tampa Bay Rays ever again. But yeah, look, I like the Tigers before this trade. Now Meadows, I don't think his brother will see time there, but we got the Meadows brothers. I told you before the show, I didn't even know he had a brother in the Tigers system. So things are going well for Detroit. I like what's going on over there. Look, again, I'm not going to run to the newspaper and say they're going to win the division, but I think they're going to be competitive and definitely higher than 77.5. I don't know where the updated line is. I don't know if he's going to move, the number by any chance, but, it definitely helps our case for taking that number, when we did. Yeah, Austin Meadows is good, DJ. He is good.
Yeah, he hasn't moved. It hasn't moved really at all. 77.5, all over the place. All the books I'm seeing. I believe Gilden, that's where the number was.
Correa's on Minnesota. You're talking about Javi Baez. Javi Baez will be driving in Austin Meadows. But to be honest, right now the projected lineup, I really like Spencer Torkelson. I think he's a little low on in their projected opening day lineup. They have him like at 7. I don't expect that to stay that way. I think he'll be more of a 5 hitter and probably should be a little ahead of Javi Baez, who's a heavy swinger. But, you know, if Javi keeps strikeouts down, you never know. But I talked to Bakil Badu, who's your leadoff hitter. Look, the top part of that lineup's really good. And people sleep. Tucker Barnhart is someone they added. He's going to bat switch this year, which is different. Yeah, from the catcher position. He's probably one of the better hitting catchers, you know, coming over from the Reds. So I like the little pieces they got. And if E-Rod shows up, again, we could talk. This could just be a Tigers show. Maybe we're Tigers fans now. I didn't see this coming ever. It's like you drafted the Rockies. I never thought I'd be here. But, hey,
yeah,
it's okay. I'm okay with it. I don't mind it at all.
That's another cheap stack, you know, really, with Detroit. There's a lot of Baez is not going all that early. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, we talked yesterday about Badu. You know, just clearly, I mean, in a Yahoo ESPN setting, he's buried down the board. If you're in a rotisserie league, he can chip in with some speed, hit atop the lineup. Robbie Grossman. So Badu, Grossman, yeah. Baez, Meadows, Miggy Cabrera, right? How much does he have left? Scope, I think, is underrated. That's a guy who can hit 265 and bring in 20, you know, hit 20 bombs. And then you mentioned Torkelson as well, and obviously some kids that could come up. I was diving into this a little bit more than I should, but Austin Meadows is a guy that really does struggle against lefties, like kind of a platoon at sometimes with Tampa. They got a few of those guys. I think that Meadows will probably still get 500 plus plate appearances. He may sit sometimes against lefties, and this isn't, I mean, huge news, but I was diving into just some of the rotations inside the AL Central. I mean, I'm looking right now at the White Sox. Keuchel's the only lefty there. I'm looking at Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't have a lefty in their starting rotation. Kansas City's got Chris Bubik. Like, he's not somebody that you should really be worried about. A lot of righties inside that rotation. And then the Twins are full on righties across the board. Ryan Gray, Ober, Bundy, and Archer. So, I mean, I know it's only a small sample, but you do play those teams quite a bit. So, you know, I think slight uptick up in terms of fantasy value.
I'm surprised the Rays traded him, but you know something, if we want to talk about don't bet against, you know, Tiger Woods, I don't doubt the Rays. They know more than me, and clearly they know more.
They do
know more than a lot of people, you know, in the baseball community, because year in, year out, we count them out, and then they're just always in the mix. So, you know, you could say it again on paper. You could not buy the Rays, but for some reason they're going to be pesky and be in there when it's all said and done. So we'll see. The AL East is only getting better, so maybe they do have some regression this year, but I wouldn't bet on it. I'd probably just stay away from it at all costs.
Let's bring up this. We've been doing this for the past few days, the NFBC, just taking a look at the ADP tonight, I guess, would be your second last night to really have a baseball draft, and then tomorrow as well. I mean, unless you're doing it and you're just kind of skipping the first week or whatnot. But Will Smith, another catcher here off the top of the board. I believe this is catcher number 3. What I said yesterday about JT Realmuto, the same thing applies. I will never draft a catcher in the top 50 picks. And NFBC leagues, high stakes leagues, you have to roll with 2 catchers, and I just can't do it. I can't bring myself together to pick a catcher in the first 75 picks. I'm usually looking at tier 3. I think Mitch Garver's a pretty good target. We won't get to him before the season starts. But Francisco Lindor, your boy, RIP, I guess, on the graphic here. I think he's a good target, though. You got Raisel Iglesias in here. I believe he is closer number 3 on average off the board. Austin Riley, Freddy Peralta, who I love as a strong target. Last year was basically free in drafts. It's just one of the what Milwaukee has going on with their pitching staff, they're going to be a tough team to play in the postseason when you got to go with Woodruff, Peralta, and Corbin Burns there, those 3, and then the bullpen that they can throw at you. George Springer, a lot to offer. Clearly, if he can stay healthy this season, he could flirt with 700 plate appearances. He could lead baseball in runs. I think he could top 120. Health has been a concern with him over the past couple of years. There seems to be something that bothers him here and there, but I do believe he's a really strong target. Nick Castellanos is now a member of the Philadelphia Phillies. Wander Franco, your boy, who you did keep in a keeper league of years. Mm-hmm. Adalberto Mondesi, you know, a friendly reminder that this is a rotisserie format. Stolen bases are a lot. They're needed, I'll say that, in a roto league. In a head-to-head league, this guy is an absolute pass for me, and he won't go inside the top 60. You're just looking at a guy who could steal 40-plus bags, but the average is not going to be there. He's got a little bit of pop, but he's just going too early for me. Then you got Javier Baez, who we touched on a little bit. Fernando Tatis Jr., who he's going to miss the first 2 months of the season. This is kind of where he's hovering. This is the ADP over the last month of the season. So we've known now for quite some time that Tatis would miss the first 2 months of the season. He's still getting drafted on average as a top 60 pick. And then Chris Bryan in there, a member of the Rockies. Who stands out to you as targets or maybe fades on this list?
So obviously Francisco Lindor is on the cover. So, you know, incredible spring. He had an incredible spring last year, didn't transition to regular season. So long story short, I hope he's able to transition that. And if he does, will be an absolute steal at his value right now. But the three that jump out to me are the outfielders, George Springer, Nick Castellanos, and I think Chris Bryan as a guy, one of the rare top guys, I think, that can go from outfield to infield, you know, utility essentially, where in a season-long format, like, he's someone I would be eyeing up. Because, you know, when as the season progresses, you can use him in a few places. He's playing in Colorado. I think his numbers will be there. He's had a somewhat decent spring. Strikeouts will probably be there, but he batted 300, small sample size. The power isn't exactly there, but again, he'll transition to Colorado. Castellanos has been raking. There's no question, you know, in terms of a fantasy baseball standpoint, you know, you can joke about his defense all you want. He's going to rake. He's going to get his. I don't know if I'd actually take George Springer over him, but I do like the idea of you getting Springer in a spot like that, and like we did in the best ball draft, maybe pairing him with some other Blue Jays because of how that lineup is going to work. And Springer, if he stays healthy, is going to have a really big bounce back year, because last year when he did play was very productive in that lineup. I think the outfielders jump out to me. And I know Mike's in the chat here, and he saw us do that best ball draft, and he was talking about how, you know, outfield is really scarce. And yeah, it'll sneak up on you really quickly. So I think getting outfield early on in the draft is a way to go. I don't know if I do it as aggressively as best ball formats, you know, 3-4 in the first 4 or 5 rounds, but you definitely got to attack it. And I think if you're looking at round 5 and you can get a Nick Castellanos or a Chris Bryant, those two guys for me just jump out instantly. If you want to gamble on George Springer and you got some Blue Jays, go ahead. I'll probably stay away just because of the injury concerns, especially if that's a high stakes league. I kind of want someone with a proven track record of health. But I think out of all of them, Castellanos mid fifth round is an absolute stud and a steal.
I agree. And, you know, that Phillies lineup is going to be pretty good offensively. I saw a bomb the other day from Schwarber. I think Schwarber's a pretty good target. That's a guy who's probably going to hit 30 plus bombs. Castellanos could hit 30 plus bombs. I mean, a couple years ago, he led baseball in doubles. Then he went to Cincinnati, and those doubles turned into homers, right? With the ballpark switch from Detroit to Cincinnati. He's got a lot to offer. I'm looking at Vlad's projections here for Springer. He's got him for 532 plate appearances. So he does have him missing some time because you have to think that the Jays are going to have a top 5 offense. He's leading off. If he was going to be healthy, he would at least have. So Vlad is projecting maybe some time missed because I think, like I said, if he were to play 162 games, he would flirt with 700 plate appearances. I really do believe that. He has him for 108 runs, 37 bombs, 87 RBI, 5 stolen bases, and hitting .266. I got his Fangraphs page up here. We do have to break, and we'll get into some NBA stuff. But just quickly, his Fangraphs page, I'm seeing the most plate appearances from Steamer, 667 plate appearances, 36 bombs, 103 runs, 91 RBI, and 8 stolen bases, hitting .258. But most projections have him for in the 500, high 500, and then Zips has him for 440, so they're being really hard on Springer there. I love the Bryan call. I on the way out here, I know there was a little bit of back and forth with some people that I had on social about Chris Bryan hitting 30 bombs. Vlad had tweeted it. I think he's going to hit 30. You know, in 2019, he hit 31. Let's just cross out 2020 altogether. It was a weird year for everybody. It was a short season. If you take away 2020 and you just go from 2016, where he had 39, he had 29 in 2017. He had an off year in 2018 where injuries kind of hurt him, and he had 13. But he bounced back with 31 in 2019. And last year, he hit 25. And I thought he was really good in San Fran. I think the bump to Coors gets him to 30. I mean, he's averaging 27.5, taking out that 2020 campaign over the last 5 seasons. So I think the bump to Coors, the lineup is okay. I know we were kind of laughing about the best ball lineup that I had with the Rockies. It wasn't the way that I wanted to go. But I think Bryant inside that lineup, playing half of his games at Coors, I think he's going to get to 30. I think he's pretty valuable. To your point, you can move him around at certain positions, third, outfield. And I think he played basically every single position last year with the Cubs and with the Giants. Let's break. You got some NBA stuff as well. So some picks to round out Mean Streets. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Mean Streets here on Game Plus Network. Tino Rodriguez and Chris Meany here with you. Tino, NBA, lots of action, 12 games. What do you like? I mean, a lot of different places to go.
A lot of games. I'm going to go with the ones that matter, and I'm going to take the points in teams that must win because of all the jumble. I came on this show and I said that as a Net fan, I was worried about them against the Detroit Pistons. They ended up barely beating the Pistons, and all of a sudden, flash forward a week, and now they're the 10th seed in the East. I told you there is some cause for concern there, but again, they are in the playoffs. They're in the play-in, and there's two teams on this list that they're going to potentially play, and those teams need to win, and that's why I'm going to take them, and both of these teams are getting points. We'll start with the Atlanta Hawks. Atlanta's been rolling. I do want to caution this. Maybe selfishly I'm picking this because they're going against the Toronto Raptors, and I've gotten the Raptors wrong every single time I've picked them. So that means by this – By history, not only are the Raptors going to cover the -4, but they'll probably win by 30 points. But I'm taking the Hawks. They're one of the hottest teams in basketball by far. The Raptors are two in their own right. They just lost at home against Miami by a handful of points. I just like what the Hawks have been doing here. They struggled on the road, but they have officially slid into the 8th spot here. And with the Hornets and the Nets right behind them, I think every game matters here. So whether they win or lose here, I think they keep it close enough to cover. The last three games against the Raptors, they won by 27 the last time, the Hawks. And then they lost the last two in Toronto. They lost by 11 and lost by 6 in the first matchup. I just think, you know, if you look at that, it's completely all over the place and staggered. You can't get much from the recent matchups, but I think you take a shot on the chance that Atlanta's going to play to win this game and keep it close no matter what. Then we'll move to the Charlotte Hornets. And the Charlotte Hornets, again, for the same reasons about the Atlanta Hawks, are going to go against a team that don't really lose at home, that are very good against the Hornets, but the Hornets got to win this game. Last time out, they lost by 4 points in Charlotte. Again, these are like gut check games to me. It's the nitty gritty. This is like once the NBA turns to the playoffs, everything is off. The regular season does not matter. These are must-win games. The Heat are also fighting for this game, so I think it's going to be an absolute toss-up. But I could see the Hornets coming out and balling. I'm just taking the points in teams that have to win, and I think we'll end up coming out at least 2-1 in this matchup because the last game here is a game I feel the most confident in. It's the team that's probably the best, if not the best, against the spread this season. They're only better without Ja Morant. I think Ja Morant will be playing today. And shout-out to all the people who somehow say that the Grizzlies and Ja Morant together are just an overrated duo, right? Like, the Grizzlies are better without Ja Morant. Like, all right, dude, take a seat, take a nap. That's absolutely insane. But it is insane that they have two losses without Ja Morant this year. I think they're like 20-2, which that tells you everything you need to know in itself. But they've beaten the Jazz the two times they played them this year, 119-109 in Memphis, and they won by 119-118 in Utah. Getting 5.5 points, one of the hottest teams and best against the spread teams in the NBA. I'm taking that all day. Really good road team as well. So, three teams that must win, or at least with the Grizzlies, can win, and we're getting points. So I feel pretty good about all three of these. And with all that said, we'll go 2-1, and the Hawks will be the one that leaves because they're playing the Raptors. So,
The Raptors, yeah, just a pain in your side, the Toronto Raptors. Good stuff there, Tino. Some NBA action from you as well. Gildan, I can't believe I didn't bring up that Eagles trade at all. I think it's fantastic. I'll touch on it in the next block, and we'll round out with a couple NHL picks as well. Keep her locked. Welcome back to Mean Streets one final time here on Game Plus Network. So 10 games on the ice. I got a couple of shot props. Looking to bounce back from yesterday. Overall, I think it was a pretty good day on our FTM bet tracker, but on this show, not spectacular. So these are the four that I tried to narrow it down of four of my favorites. And there's two Oilers here on the board, but in Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, and both guys at 3.5. I'm actually shocked that we're still getting 3.5 from McDavid at a decent price, -115, and Leon Draisaitl at plus money. A matchup against the Sharks. The Sharks have allowed the second most shot attempts at 5-5 per 60 over the last 7 weeks of the season. McDavid's last few games, 5 shots, 11, 8, 5, and 4. He's got points in 13 straight games, 26 over that span. He's on an absolute heater. And for Draisaitl, Draisaitl has his last few games, 5, 4, 6, 7, 6, and 6. Why are we getting plus money on Leon Draisaitl? It absolutely blows my mind considering he's had at least 6 shots in 4 straight games. You can get that at +125 for both of those guys. Josh Norris and Andrew Kopp are both plus money plays here. Josh Norris has a matchup against the Canadiens. No Jeff Petrie. Ben Chiarot's been traded. They've given up a lot of rubber over the past week and a half or so. And Josh Norris is coming in hot. He's fresh off a hat trick, and he's had at least 3 shots in 4 straight games. And Andrew Kopp, +135 I saw for Andrew Kopp. That may have changed since this morning over at Dangle Batselli, but he is cleared in 4 straight games. 15 shots over his last four, and he's been fantastic as a member of the New York Rangers. A matchup against the New Jersey Devils, I think Kopp hits the score sheet. I like him and Frank Vatrano as just like long shot goal scorers here today. Decent odds for both guys, and in really good spots, like I mentioned. I don't know if Jack Hughes is playing, but I do like the Rangers as we transition over to a few picks here. These first three picks that I got labeled, I think he could take them all in 60. A little bit of a risk there, but the Oilers at plus 140 to win by two goals against the San Jose Sharks. I mean, the Oilers have won four straight. Two of those four were absolute beatdowns, 6-1 in their last game against the Ducks. Mentioned the Sharks, the struggles that they have defensively to keep the puck out of their net, and all the shot attempts that they are just allowing is a lot. And if you just look overall at the Oilers, last game 7, one before that 11, 7, 8, 14, 7, 8. This is a team that loves to play to the over. Now, they do a lot of the damage themselves, but they also got, you know, a little bit suspect. They're a suspect in net, let's be honest, whether it's Koskinen or Mike Smith. Like, that's the issue, and that's why a lot of these overs are hitting. Other books are adjusting to teams like Florida, the Leafs, the Devils. This should be a total of 7. You can get the 6.5 at a decent price. I think San Jose probably gets a couple goals. I'm looking at like a 4-2 final here for Edmonton. The Bruins in 60. I know it's the second half of a back-to-back, but really good matchup against the Detroit Red Wings, another team that just struggles defensively to keep the puck out of their net. And then the Rangers, there's been, you know, Shesterkin hasn't quite been the same goalie. He's struggling lately. But I like the bounce back here against the Devils team that blew a 6-2 lead in the third period, minus 155, or you can take them in 60 at minus 110. I would not get involved with the puck line when it comes to the Rangers, but I do feel like they win the game. All right, we're out of here. That trade, Gildan, I mean, my goodness, how awesome was that trade? Maybe we can get into that a little bit more, but essentially 18 and 19, identical value. Forget the 6 and a 7. The Saints traded a third, next year's first, a 2024 second, and 16 overall in the draft. Pretty good stuff, I think. Basically, the Eagles got a third, two-thirds, a first, and a second for Carson Wentz. That's kind of how I look at it. Maybe the Saints will draft themselves a quarterback. We'll touch on that and a whole lot more tomorrow. Good luck on the ice. Good luck in the hardcore. I'll talk to you then. Cheers.